Great. Okay, Marshall, you want to call us to order?
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Werke, Judge Wheelock, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Thursday, November 17th, 2022. We are here on an oral calendar of four cases. This is our first case and a non-oral calendar of two cases. The first case is A22-0654 in the matter of the welfare of DJF-D child. Counsel, each of you will have, as you know, 15 minutes for your principal arguments. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. We have an audio recording. Well, obviously we're on Zoom today, obvious to us anyway. The audio recording will remain afterwards, although not a video recording. So counsel for appellant, we are ready for you to begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I am Sarah Martin. I represent the appellant in this case. This case involves a child charged with a gross misdemeanor who was found incompetent 5 times over the course of 2 years. The question presented in this appeal is whether Minnesota Rule of Juvenile Procedure 2001 allows for more than one notice of intent to prosecute, which suspends proceedings for an additional period of 1 year. This can be answered by the plain language of the rule. The answer is no. The rule allows for one notice of intent to prosecute. It does not allow for subsequent notices. Juvenile Rule 2001, Subdivision 7A, provides that proceedings shall be dismissed upon the earlier of the following. First, the child's 19th birthday in the case of a delinquency, or second, the expiration of 1 year from the date of finding of the child's incompetency, unless the prosecutor files a written notice of intent to prosecute. Such a notice shall extend the suspension of proceeding for 1 year from the date of filing. The rule does not provide for more than one extension. When interpreting the plain language of a rule like a statute, the rule is read as a whole, interpreting each section in light of the other sections. And the interpretation should not render any word or phrase superfluous. The plain language in this case allows for a single extension, and after that time, the proceeding shall be dismissed.
Counsel?
Yes.
As you just mentioned, we're not to render any word or phrase superfluous. Can you explain to me how your interpretation therefore accounts for the very last part of the section A2 that reads from the date of the filing subject to Rule 2001 Subdivision 7A, which sends us back to the same section, which would seem to indicate that if you have had a notice and you've gone through the process once, at the end of a second finding of incompetence, you would go back up and start over again.
My interpretation does not render any word superfluous, and that's because of this earlier of the following language. That earlier of the following language would not be necessary if a process could be extended indefinitely or repeatedly up until the 19th birthday. We assume that the drafters intended that phrase to mean something. And the only way that it does mean something is if it's going to be either suspended at the 19th birthday or the earlier of the following, which would be at the end of that 1 year extension if the child has not turned 19 by that point.
Well, I agree with you that it sends us back, and those are sort of two hard dates at which point you would no longer be allowed to have an extension. But I don't think that accounts for the idea that someone who's younger and hasn't reached either of those ages where they would age out of the juvenile system. It doesn't explain to me, at least, why we wouldn't allow for additional competency evaluations and then just continue to go back up and go through the rule again.
Again, Your Honor, I think that there's a couple things to look at. First, just the language, the earlier of the following, that would not be necessary if there was an intention to allow it up to the 19th birthday. The other thing to compare is the criminal rule 2001. If the comments to the juvenile rule 2001 says it's based on rule 20, the criminal rule 2001. And that makes the fact that there is a difference in the language more significant. We need to assume that the drafters intended that difference to mean something. If the rule had intended to allow for indefinite suspension, just like the adult rule does, there wouldn't have been any reason to include this language the earlier of the following.
But then here's what I want to inject. I mean, let's look at a practical rollout analysis of this. I mean, we don't want something to be absurd. If someone is incompetent and the 1 year expires, then what if the county is not permitted to refile? I mean, essentially you're saying a one-time determination of incompetency after a year means no further criminal prosecution. That doesn't make any sense. So how would you apply this as far as a rollout? Well, I mean, just give me a scenario on what you would see happening.
I think that the difference in the between the adult rule and the juvenile rule reflects the fact that juveniles are different and also that there's different options for juveniles. If I would say the majority of these cases where children are found incompetent, they are actually referred to CHIPS proceedings. In fact, that's probably what would have happened in this case, as you can see from the transcripts.
If that's the case, why wouldn't there be a hard and fast rule to guide us? I mean, I'm talking about the application of this and how it just doesn't seem to have any meaningful result unless we, in fact, would look at the rule and interpret it plain language and say, yes, there's no prohibition, file again, file again, file again. It's not a very artful question. I just in my head, I can't put it together in terms of how this would appear in practice. If I'm in the trial court, oh, all right, you're incompetent, and a year from now we have a magic dismissal of all charges.
I would point the court to the language in the rule, which says it shall be dismissed upon the earlier of the following. So the rule anticipates that these cases wouldn't drag on until the 19th birthday. Again, looking to the differences between the adult rule and the juvenile rule. And also juvenile rule 7A and 7B. In 7B, for cases that are pending certification or for murder cases, there is no limit placed on it. So
I wanted to ask you about that, Ms. Martin. I mean, as I understand your analysis and it is, and in my reading of the rule is, so there's an incompetency determination. The case is automatically dismissed under the rule after a year, unless there's a notice of intent to prosecute, which the state did here just days short of the year, right? I mean, there was incompetency on 6-3 of 2020, and then on 6-1, almost a year later, the state does its notice of intent, which to me suggests that they thought they were needed to do that, even though there had been intervening continuing incompetency determinations. And then there's another year. So it's not a year from incompetency, it's 2 years, right? In which there would be, under your argument, then a dismissal, unless if the child is not restored to competency. And the idea of, and I wondered why, and you were sort of, if we compare with the adult rule, does it help you? This is a helpful question for you. Does it help you that subdivision 8-2 for gross misdemeanors for adults also has an ultimate, if at the end, if the notice has been filed, charges must be dismissed when the defendant would be entitled under these rules to credit of at least 1 year if convicted. In other words, it doesn't, unlike the serious crimes, the felony crimes, which there's an indefinite suspension, right, for adults after 3 years, actually, for gross misdemeanors, it does end at some point if the person is not restored, the adult is not restored to competency. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that, I think some of the same policies come into play. With juveniles, like I said, there is the possibility of a civil commitment. There is the possibility of CHIPS proceedings. And there is perhaps a desire that these proceedings, the delinquency proceedings, don't drag out for more than the 2 years allowed under the rule.
From a policy perspective, in light of the fact that we're talking about young people who are in the very rapid developmental phase of their lives, wouldn't it make a sense from just a policy perspective that you would have a different rule for juveniles because the opportunity for them to grow and develop and possibly regain competency is much higher than it would be for adults?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. I also believe from a policy perspective that there are different types of programming available for children that there might not be in the adult system when someone is found incompetent. Again, there's civil commitment proceedings if the child is a danger to himself or others. There are CHIPS proceedings that don't have such a high bar. And then there are other types of support services, as in this case, the child, Anoka County determined that the child was getting sufficient services through his IEP and didn't need CHIPS proceedings. So there's
Ms. Martin, if we agree with you, it sounds like we're forging some new ground and that we would be likely considering a precedential opinion. Assuming you agree with that, what would you suggest as a syllabus point?
I believe a syllabus point would be simply that Rule 2001 allows for one notice of intent to prosecute and does not allow for a subsequent notice.
So, counsel, and this is, you know, a question I will have for the state. I read the state's brief as saying, but I might be wrong here and it can be corrected, that basically because there were determinations every 6 months of continuing incompetency, that we never even got to the point of the state needing to file a notice of intent to prosecute because you always measure it from the most recent confirmation that the person's not been restored to competency. So it's not even a question of can you have multiple notices, it's whether a notice was even required to start with. In other words, the clock just, I mean, it never gets triggered. Is that how you read the argument? And I wanted you to speak to that. From what it seemed like, even from the district court's order, although the district court said, you know, the notice was filed within a year of the initial competency, the June one, it later talked about a notice as sort of being the April 2020 incompetency hearing as being some sort of trigger. I'm trying to figure out what the arguments, I mean, I want you to tell me, first of all, does the rule require the notice, what happens when they're intervening within a year? I think the state argues update hearings within the year, then the rule becomes effective and notice is required. But if you have the 6 month hearings as contemplated, then it just keeps rolling out and you don't even need to, it doesn't even start triggering a need for notice.
Correct. That is how I read the state's argument as well. First of all, that's not a reasonable interpretation. That would have a 1 year period restarting every 6 months. That doesn't make logical sense. It would also render, again, that language earlier of the following superfluous. If the rule had intended for indefinite suspension up until age 19, it simply could have followed the adult rule. It's also significant that the rule uses the definite article, the instead of a. The rule doesn't say after a finding of incompetence or expiration of a or any year. The necessarily refers to something, and that's that initial finding of incompetence. The state's argument
I was wondering, I mean, that argument that it sort of restarts every 6 months would apply equally, I think, to the adult rule that you have to file within 3 years of a finding of incompetency. And that similarly, if that reasoning applied, it would apply in the adult realm as well, as I read it. Is there any authority in the adult realm that it keeps, you never get to the point of triggering the need for a notice as long as you have the semi-annual hearings?
The only authority I found that addressed a somewhat similar situation was State versus Coughlin, But that was a very different situation where the person went in and out of competency. And this—
Right, and the case resumed because they were restored to competency.
Correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. So assuming that you need to, that the notice needs to be given within the, you know, finding, initial finding of incompetency when the person's never restored, what is, then we still get to the question of whether successive notices can be filed. Then we turn to that question. Can you have successive notices of intent to prosecute? And your reasoning for that is the plain language talks about a notice and one extension.
That's correct, Your Honor. And again, ensuring that we're not rendering any part of the rule superfluous, and we would be rendering that earlier of the two, earlier of the following language superfluous if it could be extended to the 19th birthday. And again, there would really be no need for subdivision 7A2, if that was the intent to allow it to extend until the 19th birthday.
Well, unless they don't file successive ones. I mean, it's not necessarily superfluous because if you only file one and you blow your deadline, well, then there's a, you know what I mean, for successive ones. It's not like it automatically goes to age 19.
That's correct, Your Honor. Yeah.
If I could ask a question, I see that appellant's time has run out. If I could ask a question, perhaps Ms. Martin, you could answer it when you come back for rebuttal. Mm-hmm. Is that okay, Judge
Smith?
Yes,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. There are other statutes in the juvenile delinquency rules that specify when there is only one additional successive period. And the example I have is Rule 1505, subdivision 4B. And it seems that that would lead us to conclude that when the people who make the rules write these, they know exactly how to identify when they only want one additional period to occur. In that case, it was a court extending a continuance for an additional successive period not to exceed 180 days. And if we're trying to square this rule and that rule, it seems that that would weigh in favor of concluding that without such specific language about only one additional notice period or one additional continuance period, that in fact it would allow for successive notices and successive additional periods up until the hard date of turning 19 or 21 for an EJJ case, or if in the court's discretion it were to not or were to dismiss the case. So if you could address that difference in language when you come back, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great. Anything else? Okay. Thank you. Counsel for respondent, go ahead, please.
May it please the court, counsel John Schmidt, assistant Hennepin County attorney on behalf of the state of Minnesota. The plain language of the rule does not limit the number of times that a child can be found incompetent, nor does it limit the number of times that the state can file a notice of intent to prosecute. This court should affirm based on the plain language of the rule, even if this court were to find the rule to be ambiguous, as the district court did, the court should affirm, and I agree that this would be best to be in a precedential decision to provide guidance going forward. It is an issue that we see fairly often in the juvenile courts, and which is why we agreed on the discretionary review for the appellant.
What do you think, what would you propose then as the obvious question, what would you propose as a syllabus point then?
I think the syllabus point would be that there is no limitation on the number of notices of intent to prosecute that can be filed, except that it must be dismissed at the child's 19th birthday. There is a hard stop at 19.
So, counsel, can we get to what I interpreted your argument to be, which is we don't even need to get to notices of intent to file. It was just, I think, as you said in your brief, a safety net that the state filed them because they never even got to the end of 1 year following the most recent determination of incompetency. So in your view, as long as there are the contemplated hearings that show that the person has not yet been restored to competency, that it just keeps moving the trigger up. Is that right? So in this case, where they're every 6 months, there never needed to be a notice of intent to prosecute. Is that right?
I think based on the plain language of the rule and whether that was intended or not, that is what the plain language of the rule says. There is nothing in the rule that says that it has to be from 1 year from the date of the initial finding of the child's incompetency or the first finding of incompetency. That would be adding additional words to the language of the rule that just don't exist. It is
a finding. So in the adult realm, where it has to be done within 3 years for felonies, you know, you could go 2 years and 9 months where the person's incompetent and have another, you know, hearing on that. And then if they're still incompetent, it starts another 3 years rolling then. So, I mean, now we're up to 6 years where the person, and the state never has to file a notice of intent as long as that person remains incompetent.
Well,
and is shown to be, as shown again, yep, they're not restored, they remain incompetent. So as long as you do that anytime slightly under 3 years, you just keep it rolling.
Well, correct. In the adult realm, we would be looking at civil commitments and other sort of things that would exist in those situations. In the juvenile world, we have a hard stop at the age of 19. And so I believe when you're talking about upon the earlier of the following and looking at that language, we're looking at a situation where the prosecution or the state decided for some reason that they're not going to continue forward with this. And they don't want this delinquency proceeding lingering over a child's head if there isn't going to be additional findings of incompetency or if the state isn't going to file a notice of intent to prosecute. That if those steps are not occurring, the case must be dismissed. And at the very end, it would be a 19.
And those steps being either filing a notice, if required, or what's the other step then when you said clear all the steps that the state would
additional
take?
Findings of incompetency.
So to have the six-month hearings.
Correct. Right. But I do think it's important, and I think the state should be filing notices of intent to prosecute because it shows that they are still engaged and that they are intending to move forward with the case when it happens. But again, the plain language of the rule does not say anything about, it doesn't limit the number of notices of intent to prosecute. It doesn't say only one notice of intent or only one extension.
Do the rules contemplate, I mean, I know that the rule, you know, if a person under subdivision 6 says that the head of the institution to which a child is committed shall report every 6 months. Is there any, I don't know whether this child was, if we, you know, committed or not. Like what happens with, is it up to the state otherwise? Is there anything in the rules that directs that there should be a 6 month review hearing in a situation like this? Is it just up to the state?
I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe it's up to the judge and it's up to the parties involved of the competency determinations. And you know, this is a situation that you can see just from the district court's order that this is working, I think, as it should, where the parties are involved and they're looking at the services that should be provided. And the state for, you know, the prosecutor for Hennepin is saying Anoka really needs to be providing services here, and we don't see that happening. And they're trying to figure that out. The alternative, if you do dismiss it after the 1 year of notice to intent to prosecute, so long as the statute of limitations hasn't run, then we're filing a new petition to start over. And then we're starting over with a new judge who may not have familiarity with the case rather than sticking with the judge who was originally assigned to it. So that it creates a situation that I don't think the drafters of the rule intended.
Mr. Schmidt, you in your briefing, you've alluded to a policy that being deemed incompetent should not excuse an individual from criminal liability. And you have suggested that we employ an adult criminal rule 611.026 to this juvenile case. Can you tell me under what authority that would be appropriate for us to consider that?
I cited that for just the general proposition of that is the general policy of Minnesota. I agree that in terms of specific, that adult statute doesn't directly apply to this particular juvenile. But it was just more for the general policy purpose of that. But
and Mr. Schmidt, can you tell me how does this, you know, argument, I mean, that even that argument that you just allude to, that there should be accountability. And your interpretation of this rule, how does it compare with and square with the adult rule for gross misdemeanors, where that once a notice is filed, the charges must be dismissed when the defendant would be entitled to custody credit of at least 1 year if convicted? How does that work? Doesn't that still compare those for me? Why doesn't that help the appellant's case here?
My reading of the rule is that it applies to all charges brought in delinquency. And so it's not limited to gross misdemeanors versus felonies and those types of charges. But the adult rule does make that distinction. And so when we're looking at that, there is a distinction for juveniles when there's misdemeanors or petty misdemeanors, and those must be dismissed under subdivision 7A, or a different subdivision, which happened in this case. There was a misdemeanor that was part of that the district court dismissed. So there is that similarity that follows that track, but at least for gross misdemeanors, for juveniles, they have made that distinction. And they have put it all together in one thing, whereas they haven't delineated it between two like they have for the adult court.
Mr. Schmidt, could you respond to the argument that appellant makes about the use of the definite article the instead of a, and how that impacts your position?
Yeah, the definite article the, I don't think refers to the initial finding of incompetency. That's adding additional words to what is in the rule. You'd have to say the initial, the first, there's other words that can be added to it. And the drafters of the rules certainly know how to do that if that is the intent. It is just the finding of an incompetency. And there were multiple findings of incompetency that continued this going forward.
Why, Mr. Schmidt, is it just happenstance that the state really did it a year within just short of a year from the initial finding of incompetency?
No,
why, and is there some authority for the idea that it's a rolling trigger, you know, for each new determination that the person remains incompetent? What's our best authority for that?
I don't think it was happenstance. I think it is good practice to do so. And these are motions that we have seen in Hennepin County Juvenile Court, which is, again, why I think clarification will be helpful moving forward on these types of cases. So in order to not face an argument that we have somehow waived it and that we are now looking at dismissal, it is best practices. I think it is a good practice and should be done by the state to do that. And that is our practice in Hennepin County. And I'm sorry, Judge, I forgot the second half of your question.
And for the authority for the proposition, because I think the district court disagreed with you on this reading. The district court went along the lines of that it's I had to be filed by June, you know, a year from the initial one.
Correct.
But what's the best authority that it is sort of a rolling thing for?
I think the best authority for that is just the plain language of the rule. There isn't a case that I can give you, but the plain language of the rule is just 1 year from the date of the finding of the child's incompetency. And so if there are additional findings of incompetency, then that 1 year trigger restarts. But again, I do think it is best practice. I do think it is a good thing to file the notice of intent to prosecute. Now, again, the earlier of those of the following would apply to those situations where there is only the one finding of incompetency. There isn't subsequent findings leading up to that. And the state, the judge overseeing the case isn't keeping it, moving it forward, and you don't want this hanging out there. And so then if a notice of intent to prosecute hasn't been filed, or if they make an affirmative decision not to file one, the case must be dismissed at that point. So it's not lingering. But if there are subsequent findings of incompetency under the plain language of the rule, that would restart a 1 year period.
Which would be under the plain language, that would be the syllabus point, an actual holding. If we adopted that, right? You never need to get to the multiple notices issue under your plain language reading.
Sure. Yeah. Under a plain language reading with that, it would be any finding of incompetency starts a 1 year period. Now, if the court were to agree with the district court and find this ambiguous, I think the district court's reasoning is sound and should be adopted. The comment to the rule for the adult rule talks about that there are no limitations on the number of extensions, and the language would become superfluous regarding the idea of where it circles back to the age of 19.
So when we compare, can you speak to or explain to me a little bit the first one statement you made about comparison to the adult rule? When I look at the adult rule for felonies, at least, sort of the comparable, within 3 years, file a written notice to prosecute, full stop. And then it doesn't put any limit on the extension of the suspension. It just ends there. And then the juvenile rule says, you know, such a notice shall extend it for 1 year. So the juvenile rule adds a time limit on the extension of the suspension from the notice, unlike the adult rule. So why does that help your interpretation rather than hurt it?
Well, in the comments for the adult rules, it's providing guidance that there are no limits on the extensions, and the juvenile rule talks about the fact that it is based on the adult rule.
So why would there be multiple extensions in the adult rule? You just need to file one and then it's indefinite, right? As long as you do it within 3 years.
Under the reading that I was advocating for? Is that what you're...
I'm wondering why the adult rule, maybe I just need to look at the comment. The comment is talking about multiple extensions that they
It talks about the comment to the adult rule talks about that there's no limit on the number of extensions that can be filed. And at the district court, we had sort of a battle of comments. We had the comment in the adult rule. We had the Minnesota practice series. And the Minnesota practice series talked about it's silent on the additional for extensions. The juvenile rule is silent on that. And I don't think that necessarily provides much guidance because it is silent. It doesn't say one way or the other of how many extensions can be filed. It doesn't say only one extension, and it doesn't say multiple extensions. So the rule is silent on that, and I agree with that comment. And so we were pointing to the comment in the adult rule. Unless the court has any other question, we'd ask that you affirm in a precedential opinion.
I'm sorry, I do have one question. I'm looking at the comments of Rule 20 in the adult rule. I guess I must be missing it. I'm not seeing talk about extensions. What's the language that you're quoting? I'm sorry. If you have it there.
No
limit exists for the time or number of hearings that may be held to determine competency. I see that.
And I think it's the no limit piece of the rule. And maybe
Okay, so no limitation for the time or number of hearings that may be held under Rule 21 to determine the defendant's competency. Maybe is that what?
I think it's the no limitation piece that we've been pointing to in these battle of the comments.
Okay, thank you. Any rebuttal, Ms. Martin?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to address Judge Wheelock's question regarding the Rule 1505 Subdivision 4B and how that impacts. I think that rule shows exactly how the drafters would have allowed for a subsequent extension in this case. It expressly says the court may extend the continuance for an additional successive period not to exceed 180 days. So following that same format, in this case, the rule could have said something to the effect of from 1 year from the incompetency finding, unless the state files a notice of extension to prosecute, which extends the suspension for 1 year. At that point, it shall be dismissed unless the court, state files a subsequent notice of intent to prosecute. So the rule in that case in 1505 spells out a subsequent extension. And that could have been done in this case if that was the drafter's intent. Instead, it refers back to subdivision 7A, which says that the proceeding shall be dismissed upon the earlier of the following. The rule does not provide for an extension. Regarding the comment in the criminal rule 20 that said that there's no limitation for the time or number of hearings that may be held, I believe that simply refers to the fact that the defendant can continuously be or repeatedly be evaluated to determine whether they have regained competency. And that is similar in the juvenile case. The juveniles are, at least for more serious cases, are often sent to the regain competency programs, much like adults are. And they can be reevaluated before even the 6 month period to determine if they've regained competency. So I think that merely addresses the fact that they can have hearings anytime that there is reason to believe that the child has regained competency. If the rule had intended to allow for more than one extension, it would have said so. That is the canon of expressio unius. If it intended to allow for more than one extension, subdivision 2 could have included a statement that the notice shall extend suspension of the proceeding for 1 year unless the prosecuting attorney files a subsequent notice of intention to prosecute. The rule doesn't say that. Unless there are further questions from this court, the appellant would simply ask that this court reverse the juvenile court's order and remand to the court with instructions to dismiss the petition. Thank you.
Thank you. It appears there are no questions. Thank you both for your helpful briefing and oral arguments. We appreciate it today. The case is submitted. A decision will be out in a statutory time period. Thank you.